Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to God's glory and that of his kingdom. In the course of my time here in Washington, I've had the privilege of knowing a few members of the United States Congress. One of the men that I've been most impressed by is a congressman from the great state of Texas. He represents the people of the 27th District of Texas, to be precise. His name is Representative Michael Cloud. He's a member of the Oversight and Reform Committee in the Congress, as well as its Agriculture Committee. But he's also been a very vocal and, I think, influential constitutional conservative. And we admire that greatly, as well as his commitment to protecting persecuted Christians around the world, a passion that we share. It's great to have him with us. Welcome, Congressman, once again to Securing America.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you and certainly appreciate your generous, kind words.
Well, I mean it. And I got a lot to talk with you about, so let's get on with it. You have been, as a man with a district, not too far from the border with Mexico on the Gulf of Mexico coast, very familiar with what is happening as a result of what I think can only be described as an invasion of our country across that now open southern border, thanks to the policy of the Biden administration. Give us a sense, if you would, you know, from the perspective of somebody on the ground in the vicinity, of how serious the problem is now from obviously a public health, public safety, but also national and homeland security perspective.
Yeah, it's really, really, really bad and getting worse. And it's really sad because we know what to do about it at this point. You know, you had the Trump administration who inherited a problem and had to come up with a solution. And then you have the Biden administration who inherited a solution and has created a problem. And that's what's really sad. We know what to do. We know how to secure the border at this point, and we just have an unwillingness to do this by the Biden administration. And so the southern tip of my district is 2 hours north of the border. And our district's in what law enforcement would call a fatal funnel. There's a couple major highways that come from a couple cities in the border and go on their way to Houston. And we understand Houston to be the human trafficking capital of our nation, sadly. And so along those corridors and throughout our community, you see all kinds of horrific activity. You know, you'll have ranchers who find rape trees on their property. They'll come across dead bodies on their property. And then there's the day-to-day stuff of fences run over, thousands of dollars of property destroyed. Families are afraid to allow their children to roam their own property. And then so many just elements of criminal activity and crime, from license plates being stolen to help cover for stolen cars and those kind of things, you know, happening throughout the district.
What you're describing as a district in the interior of the country, not right on the border, is a microcosm of what's happening really across the country now. It's said that, you know, every state is now a border state as a result of the migration that is taking place here. You have been, I think, quite properly very critical of Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, as the kind of point man on the wrecking operation that the Biden administration has done on, as you say, the policies that worked in the Trump administration. You've called for his impeachment, as I understand it. Talk a little bit about both his record and the growing sense that he's completely unfit for the job and has indeed engaged in activities that would justify his impeachment.
Well, when you look at the results, you have to either equate it to gross incompetence or willful neglect, either of which make him unfit for the job.
To say nothing of active malevolence, which is what I attribute it to, actually.
Right. And after meeting with him and after talking with him, you begin to understand that I put it this way last week on the House floor. if we were to ask the cartels to design a border security apparatus for us, it would look very close to what we have now. Because truthfully, the cartels don't want open borders. They just want just a semblance of security, just enough for them to be able to charge their exorbitant fees, but really to act without any sort of impunity. And that's exactly what we have right now on the border. The cartels have operational control along the southern side of the border. They're beginning. We've known that Mexico in certain parts acts as if a narco state, and they're becoming even increasingly more so. But what we now know is that cartels, even in places like California, are beginning to set up their own enclaves and take over communities and neighborhoods and act without impunity. You know, you had some years ago, you had one county sheriff's race in the United States where both candidates were running on a, hey, we need to clean up the cartels and get rid of their influence. Both candidates had already been bought by the cartels. And so that's the choice that American citizens had going to the polls that day. And so we need to stand strong against these cartels.
Yeah, there's an expression, I guess, in the cartels lingo that do you want the silver or the lead? In some cases, you can be actually killed by them. In other cases, they'll simply buy you off. And that is, as you say, now manifesting itself, not just sadly on the southern side of the border where it's rampant, but also on our side, is it not? When you talk about Mayorkas, of course, there are other reasons for grave concern about his conduct, and notably this latest disinformation governance board. But whether it's the border, whether it's the interior insecurity situation, whether it's you know, censoring our understanding of what's going on, for that matter, and our ability to talk about it, this does seem to be a man who is a prime candidate for an early resignation, if not hopefully with the help of a new Congress, removal from office through the impeachment process.
Well, you have a secretary who, you have a secretary who refuses to enforce the law. You know, right now the number one killer of young people is fentanyl, and he's saying that the greatest danger is white supremacy in our nation, yet we don't see that happening from a criminal aspect. I mean, there's always going to be pockets of extremism, you know, but he's just wayward when it comes to what are the real issues that are affecting Americans and is refusing to enforce the law.
Well, willfully blind, I guess, is another word for it, if I may offer that one. One other data point, as I recall, there were something like 364,000 so-called getaways in the past year. And I'm sure that's a conservative number, wildly understated, probably. And the thing that I just very quick, we got to pause here in just a moment for a short break. But your thoughts, sir, on the likelihood that with that huge number, to say nothing of people that were admitting through, you know, the front channel, are there people that are coming in that are either cartel operatives or maybe jihadists or terrorists of other stripes intent on doing us harm in our country, whose exact nature and disposition and whereabouts we don't know? And how serious a problem do you regard that to be?
There is little doubt that bad actors are coming across the border. We've seen in recent months over 42 people on the terrorist watch list make it into our country. Even 10 minutes from my house, our sheriffs arrested a known human smuggler. So think about what it takes to be in that category already. A known human smuggler. They got to looking at the data on the phone. She had connections to MS-13 and ISIS. She was handed over to the federal authorities and about a month later released into the population in my district. And so this is the
just another constituent. Congressman, hold that thought if you would. I've got to just take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about that. Also about food insecurity, a problem that I think more and more of us are concerned about and we need your advice on as well. We'll be talking more with Representative Michael Cloud right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Russian dictator Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine in February has precipitated an impressive and these days rare degree of bipartisan support here for the people of Ukraine, translating into billions in aid and vast arms transfers to the beleaguered defenders. Despite punishing sanctions and military reverses, however, Putin appears determined to continue his murderous aggression. Indeed, he threatens to escalate the conflict further and punish those assisting Ukraine, including with nuclear weapons. As the war in Ukraine's actual and potential costs continue to grow, with President Biden seeking another $33 billion, hard questions about America's role there must be urgently addressed. In the course of a very timely webinar at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time today, our Center for Security Policy will assess the case for Ukraine with two prominent Ukrainian-American leaders and a former senior Kremlin official. Join us at securefreedom.org. This is Frank Affney. We're back, and we're continuing a really important conversation with Congressman Michael Cloud. He represents the people of the 27th District of Texas. He is a rising star, I think it's fair to say, as a constitutional conservative in the Republican caucus in the House of Representatives. And we've just been talking with him about one of his preoccupations, understandably, namely border insecurity and the growing danger that it represents to all of our people and communities, whether they're in proximity to the border, as his constituency is, or elsewhere in this country. Congressman, I wanted to turn to another topic. You're a member, as I mentioned, of the Agriculture Committee in the House of Representatives, and there is growing reason to believe that policies of our own government, to some extent, and developments elsewhere in the world, natural phenomenon like droughts, wars in places like Ukraine, and the supply chain problems with fertilizers and amino acids, and in some cases just food itself, is giving rise to a real danger of food insecurity, even here in the United States, a country renowned for its productive agricultural sector. Talk about how you see that coming challenge.
We kind of have a number of issues, from bad policies here at home to geopolitical things that we see happening on the world stage that are leading us really to a pivot point. And right now already, you know, when families go to the grocery stores, they notice less choices. Many shelves are empty. Food prices are astronomically high. A lot of that you can trace back to broken supply chains. You can also look at our bad energy policies here. A number of the products that farmers most recently when they're growing food use, you look at high prices of fertilizer that have gone up. You look at pesticides that are hard to find right now. Both of those are derivatives from energy here in the United States. We're having to get much of the fertilizer historically comes from Russia. So, of course, that's a deal right now. And then you have a number of restrictions being placed on the oil and gas industry here in the United States when we should be leading the world in all of these practices. A number of our committee.
Could I just ask you, how does the energy piece fit in? Are you talking about transportation costs, or are you talking about production of fertilizer using natural gas?
Yeah. So you have the input costs are going up when you have fuel costs going up for transportation. You have the byproducts of fertilizers, of pesticides, of some of the chemicals that are used. And so if you think about the return, Americans are best in the world at having the least inputs and the highest yields. One of the ways that happens is because of the fertilizer technology, the pesticide technology. And so if you don't have the fertilizers and pesticides, you have lower yields, which means there's less food to go around. Plus the high cost of transportation just, you know, makes it very difficult for American families when food prices start going up. Add to that, you know, what we're seeing in the geopolitical sphere where you have major wheat producer in essence, taken off the market. And then between Russia and Ukraine, I think they're like something like 13% of the vegetable oil production in the world, too. And so that's in question at the moment. And so when we look ahead, you know, a year from now, in the United States, you know, we could expect higher food prices. We'll probably be able to outbid the rest of the world when it comes to that, but extremely high prices. But in some of these third world and poorer countries, they're going to be looking at food shortages, which, you know, what that begins to do politically, it's going to be very interesting to watch.
Yeah. You mentioned supply chains. One other facet of this, I think, is that China has been hoarding immense amount of corn and wheat and perhaps other foodstuffs as well. And that may have a bearing on all of this. In addition, there's drought. I was unaware of how severe it was in the southwestern part of the United States until I heard the other day that the Hoover Dam, like the reservoir behind it, is now sufficiently low that an intake has been exposed. And that means that they have to curb the flow of the water beyond. And that in turn is going to impact, I'm told, something like 25 million Americans. I imagine some in the agricultural sector as well as consumers. Does that factor into this equation as well? And in your estimation, are we looking not just at food being less, shall we say, abundant, but actual famine in parts of the country?
I'll say this, you know, I obviously stay in regular communication with our ag community and, you know, made a number of calls to farmers across our district in the last week and met with a number of them yesterday. And, you know, as we're looking to the farm bill and different policies and things that we're preparing in the ag community, I would ask them, you know, what's your biggest need right now? Every one of them, rain. You know, we need rain right now. And so right now, if we were able to get a few more inches of rain, some crops could be saved. But right now they're looking at, many of them are looking at a loss of their crop for the season if we're not able to get rain soon. So certainly it's a time for us to be praying for rain as well on this National Day of Prayer. So.
I'm big on prayer, that's for sure. Congressman, let me ask you about one other item that I know is a passion of yours. I mentioned that you're a constitutional conservative. It's something I admire about you. Fiscal irresponsibility is now rife in this administration. What the cumulative impact of that is going to be is hard to calculate. One facet of it that worries me greatly, and I imagine does you as well, is the possibility that as we've been simply printing money to a fairly well, we're really jeopardizing the dollar's reserve currency status, and the implications of that are incalculable. Walk us through your concerns in these scores, if you would.
Yeah, we have had the privilege of being the world reserve currency, you know, really since World War II, but we have not been acting like the world reserve currency. We've been very irresponsible, and especially in the last year or two, the trillions and trillions of dollars that have just been printed, you know, for projects. It's just, you know, we're looking at $30 trillion dollars in debt and no plan to get back to fiscal responsibility at the moment. Already you have Saudi Arabia making an agreement to purchase or to deal with China using the Chinese currency. India's considering the same sort of thing. And so you know, if we would lose our position as a world reserve currency, it would be unprecedented, and it would be really detrimental to everything that we're trying to get done for our families as well as our place in the world. And if you look at it in the context of history, you know, most great nations in history crumble from within, and we have to really put in these right policies that'll bring us back from the brink and really reverse course on a lot of these issues when it comes to what we're doing.
Well, and I know that you're taking a leading role in that with Senator Mike Lee and other Republicans in the House and Senate, and I commend you for doing so. I was struck by this data point in an article about your work in which they talked about the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco estimating that the costs the actual cost, Biden had said it wasn't going to cost us anything for this American Rescue Plan, has been a 3% addition to the inflation rate, which is just absolutely stunning. And if the knock-on effect is that we lose the dollar's reserve currency status, as you said, the damage will be unimaginable. Congressman Mike Cloud, thank you for your time today, sir, for your leadership in the House of Representatives and in the country more generally. We look forward, I hope, to future visits with you to get into more of these issues in greater detail and also your recommendations for what we do about each of them. It's vital that the public both be aware of the problem and appreciate people like yourself who are trying to do something about it. So Godspeed in all that work, and come back to us again soon if you would, sir. Next up, we'll speak with Jeff Nyquist. We'll be talking about China's weapon of choice, biological warfare. Straight ahead.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. I'm always delighted to be able to say welcome to a good friend and valued colleague, a man that I've come to admire tremendously for his strategic thinking, his knowledge, and the ability to communicate it all, both at his blog, jrnyquist.blog, and in his various writings, among other places at the Epoch Times, and of course, in book form, notably The Origins of the Fourth World War, a particularly salient topic at the moment. His name, again, is Jeff Nyquist. We're always delighted to have him with us. Good to have you again today. Jeff, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about one likely challenge we face in a new world war, and that is from communist China. As you know very well, we've been at war for some time with the Chinese. They call it unrestricted warfare. They've actually declared it in the pages of the People's Daily as people's war. Most of us are unaware that it's happening, let alone the various manifestations of that warfare. But we're all aware of one manifestation, and that is what I think of as a biological weapons attack using COVID-19, the so-called SARS-CoV-2 virus. This brought us to reflecting on some of your previous writings about the background to and seeming plans for biological warfare of the Chinese Communist Party. Walk us through what we know about all that at this point and what we can surmise from what we've been subjected to of late.
Well, when you talk to Chinese who are familiar with documents that have been smuggled out of Communist China from the Communist Party, there is one in particular. It's the secret speech of Chiao Chen, which took place about 20 years ago. And it was translated.
Who was Chiao Chen?
Chiao Chen was the defense minister of China, and he was a general. He was a strategist, a leading Chinese strategist, and he was on the Party Military Commission.
And at the time of this speech, he was in that role as defense minister?
He was defense minister, yeah. Yes. General Chiao Chen's speech, he gave several in that period about the opening of the Chinese century and so on. But this speech was to an elite group of party cadre, top Communist Party officials, describing their strategy of how to deal with the problem of America. And of course, the problem of America is that China needs our land because China does not have enough land to support its people indefinitely. The land is being polluted. The rivers are polluted. The Chinese people are also facing economic problems due to things related to this. And therefore,
and population issues, of course.
Population pressures. He said that the Communist Party can only justify its existence by teaching the Chinese people how to go outside of China and find new land.
This sounds eerily reminiscent to the old Hitlerian Lebensraum, doesn't it?
Well, actually, he mentions Hitler in the speech, and he talks about Lebensraum, and he says, look, we can't talk about Lebensraum or living space, because then we'll sound like Hitler, and then we'll be, you know, described as Nazis. So he's very aware of how the outside world would see this, so it's a sensitive topic. And then he starts talking about, well, will we find land in India or Taiwan or wherever? And he said it's all trivial because anywhere they look for land, the Americans will be against them. And so, but it happens that the Americans have the land they want, the best farmland in the world. And he said, right. So if we have to fight America anyway, no matter who we try to take land from, it might as well be the Americans' land. And so he sort of resolves this problem in this formula that he puts forward, that it's them or us. The Americans are standing in our way, so we might as well make it about America.
Mm-hmm. And they have what we want. And the issue that I'm particularly concerned about, Jeff, and I've learned a lot from you on this subject, is they have an appreciation that if they want to get the land and have it be usable for agricultural purposes or production of other things, they can't destroy it. They can't irradiate it, which would be, of course, the practical effect of a nuclear attack against this country. How have they resolved that particular problem, at least at doctrinal level?
Xi said that in challenging the U.S., there was always the danger of a nuclear war, but in that case, you know, China loses 700-800 million people and problem solved. But the real way they ought to try to solve the problem is by killing 100 to 200 million Americans and causing American society to collapse through a biological attack.
And that would have the upside of getting rid of the population that they don't want, enabling, I guess, the remaining population to be enslaved, but not despoiling the land, not precluding its use by the Chinese. And to the extent that we know much about this biological warfare program, we've certainly been focusing more attention on it in the hindsight of what we believe is a virus emanating from one of its laboratories. But give us a sense of the extent to which this program, which as I understand it was actually put in train by Deng Xiaoping back in the early 1990s. How far advanced is it? Is it capable of meeting the kind of ambitious needs that you've just described?
Well, all the scientific studies, all the scientific laboratories and schools in China have reached out over the last 20 plus years to the West, scientific exchanges. They're involved with India, the U.S., Europe. They're gathering information, and they actually steal from the labs in the West. They steal organisms even. They got caught doing that in Canada not long ago. And of course, the scientific exchanges where they go into, for example, Emory, that feeds the CDC. They get involved in, look, a large percentage, up to 50% in our government labs are Chinese nationals, right? Which is kind of a shock to me when I found that out. And they also supply 50% of our active pharmaceutical ingredients for our pharmaceutical industry. And they've done this over the last 22 or so years intentionally as part of this program. Because not only getting the positions in our own system and connections with big pharma are attack vectors, but also getting the science, working with our scientists, learning how to do genes, yes, gain of function research. Look, it's very funny. We find gain of function research is dangerous. We don't want people doing it here. So people outsource it to China. Well, this is the perfect thing for China. It's absolutely the perfect thing for them because then they can take this and they can make a weapon, and they can actually then blame it on us.
Right. And have in the case of COVID, of course. And Jeff, it's important to recall that in accordance with the Biological Warfare Convention, to which China is a party, they're not supposed to have any biological warfare program at all. I mean, you can do defensive work, yes, but not in terms of offensive. And one of the things that has come to my attention is it's of a piece with what you said about their deep penetration of our research institutions and laboratories. They've essentially melded with their military all of their so-called civilian pharmaceutical and research institutions and any other businesses, I understand it, that could conceivably provide help to their biological warfare program. Is that your understanding as well?
Oh, yes. They'll steal everything that isn't nailed down. We know about their intellectual property theft. I mean, stealing scientific data is extremely, you know, in their lane. This is what they do.
But in addition, there's this so-called civil-military fusion in which their own capabilities are sort of a whole-of-society operation aimed at advancing their purposes.
Every business in China, whatever it is, has a military or strategic in importance of some kind, whether it's transportation or communications or every branch of science, nuclear, medicine, economics, every single branch of science. In fact, this is the way both China and Russia organize themselves. They have institutes that do nothing but study, but they always study this in the context of what is the strategic meaning? How can we exploit this?
Yeah. And there's so many applications of that beyond the biological space comes to mind particularly. But the biological warfare aspect of this, I have to say, especially in the wake of what we have been subjected to, not just the United States, of course, but the entire world. As Gordon Chang has said on this program and elsewhere, this is the first time any country in the world has attacked all of the rest of them simultaneously. And is it your view, and very quickly, we've got 30 seconds here, Jeff, was it a biological warfare attack, or was it simply that they took advantage as a proof of concept or maybe even a dress rehearsal of an accidental leak?
Well, we don't know, but if it was an accidental leak, they certainly then turned it into an attack by the way they behaved.
Spreading it worldwide by sending millions of people from Wuhan, once they knew that that was the locus of this disease all over the world. Jeff, I have to leave it at that for the moment. I did want to wish you a happy birthday, as well as, I guess, a notorious person who also shares that distinction. Karl Marx, for heaven's sakes. I can't imagine two more polar opposites, but we appreciate your work so much in countering the effects of Marxism, whether it's from the Chinese or the Russians or others. And I know you'll keep up the good work, and we look forward to talking with you again very soon. We're going to continue our conversation about what the Chinese are up to in the way of unrestricted warfare with our next guest, Kevin Freeman, our expert on economic warfare and how you may be underwriting the China threat. right ahead. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Russian dictator Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine in February has precipitated an impressive and these days rare degree of bipartisan support here for the people of Ukraine, translating into billions in aid and vast arms transfers to the beleaguered defenders. Despite punishing sanctions and military reverses, however, Putin appears determined to continue his murderous aggression. Indeed, he threatens to escalate the conflict further and punish those assisting Ukraine, including with nuclear weapons. As the war in Ukraine's actual and potential costs continue to grow, with President Biden seeking another $33 billion, hard questions about America's role there must be urgently addressed. In the course of a very timely webinar at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time today, our Center for Security Policy will assess the case for Ukraine with two prominent Ukrainian-American leaders and a former senior Kremlin official. Join us at securefreedom.org. This is Frank Gaffney. Welcome back, and welcome especially to our next guest. He is one of our regulars, I'm happy to say. He has his own television program, however. It's Economic War Room on the Blaze TV channel. His name is Kevin Freeman. He is the host, of course, of Economic War Room. We are always anxious to catch up with him, but perhaps never more so than at a moment when he has some good news to share with us. Before we get to that, though, I want to get into why your news, Kevin, is so important, and that is in the economic and financial warfare battle space, the incredible fact is that we in this country, specifically about 160 million Americans by some estimates, who have money in the U.S. capital markets, are having a good chunk of that invested in our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party, at the hands of, masters of the universe, I guess they think of themselves as, like Larry Fink of BlackRock and Steve Schwarzman and Ray Dalio and others. Talk a little bit about the phenomenon of American investors underwriting our mortal enemy and its inadvisability.
You know, Frank, if you were to put this in a spy novel, you wouldn't believe it. And it does take place over a longer period of time. But essentially, our elites have sold us out. They've sold us out by hampering American corporations and putting all sorts of regulations and problems and threats to us. And at the same time, enhancing Chinese corporations, making them look like the better investment opportunity. A little over 20 years ago, the Chinese economy was a nothing compared to ours, one-tenth the size of ours, approximately the size of Italy. And yet the elites, through most favored nation status, through the World Trade Organization and otherwise, have made us as Americans think that's the beautiful place to invest. And the net result of it is they've put a significant trillions of dollars of American capital into Chinese communist companies that are working at the benefit of the Chinese Communist Party. It is one of the greatest stories that people don't know that they've been funding their own enemy.
Right. And in some cases, it's not just companies working for the benefit of the Chinese Communist Party writ large, but specifically its military arm, the People's Liberation Army. And that brings us to a specific outrage that I wanted to vet with you. That is that the government's pension plan, the federal government of the United States, with millions of military and civilian employees, past and present of that government, the world's largest pension fund, is now poised to start doing the same thing as what Fink and company have done with other people's money, ours notably, and that is invested in these Chinese companies. Talk about what's up with this Thrift Savings Plan initiative. I thought Donald Trump said we're not going to do that. How could it be that this is once again in the offing?
Frank, this is like a horror film. You're thinking, why won't this villain die? We killed it once. Yeah, exactly. Now, what happened was President Trump realized, and largely due to your work and the Committee on the Present Danger, China and others, he recognized that we've been funding the Chinese Communist Party, military companies, but also companies that repress their human rights with surveillance and everything else inside China, and said, we're not going to put government money in the pensions of government, the faithful public servants, the military. We're not going to put that money into China, because can you imagine the absurdity of having our military funding arms manufacturer or military equipment manufacturer or weapons manufacturer that would be aimed at our own military? We'd be funding the gun that's shooting at us. That's crazy. And so he put a stop to it. We got findings from the White House. The Department of Labor said, we're not going to do this. We thought it was dead and killed. And lo and behold, they found a backdoor way to bring it back. And they kind of covered up and say, well, we're just going to give you broad mutual fund offerings. What they're really doing is opening a way to fund communist China. And it's frightening, and it's happening before our eyes, and people need to get mad about this. This is a problem.
Sure. Well, mad as hell is the way we describe it in a campaign of the Committee on the Present Danger China. And I want to say, Kevin, we appreciate your membership in that committee and the great leadership that you provide. This is going on at the same time as we're seeing more and more evidence of elite capture, not just on Wall Street, sadly, and not just in the business sector more broadly, Kevin, but talk a little bit about the extent to which this has systemically been pursued by the Chinese Communist Party and their success, among other things, in compromising the commander-in-chief himself.
Well, it is a brilliant strategy. You have to admire the success that they've had in capturing Hollywood. So you can't make a movie that criticizes China, which is ridiculous, but it's true. They've captured the media outlets. They've captured politicians, sometimes with outright bribes, sometimes with campaign contributions. They've captured universities so that the studies that come out favor China. They've captured international organizations. But you're right, the most insidious of all of these is what we find in the laptop from hell, Hunter Biden's laptop, that shows where he's taking money, the family's taking money, the big guy's getting paid, and that is the president of the United States. And this goes back, you know, more than a decade. You can see where President Biden was handing special favors through a memo of understanding that allowed Chinese companies to operate here, even though they weren't meeting our accounting standards. This is really dirty, it's really bad, and it shows a money flow from China into the United States. The elites have sold out the American people so often, and they have caused our economy, which was clearly the only single dominant economy on the planet, and we've been defunded and funding them. And now they were one-tenth the size of us a little over two decades ago. Now they're rivaling us and threatening us. This is unacceptable.
Yeah, no question about it. And threatening us across the broadest imaginable spectrum of unrestricted warfare. You're one of the great authorities on that subject, Kevin Freeman. And I commend, in fact, to our audience, a series of short videos that you've done at the Committee on the Present Danger site, presentdangerchina.org, that go into some detail on how each of these vectors of this line of attack, if you would, by the Chinese Communist Party, aimed at taking us down, has been advanced, you know, using economic warfare techniques, among many, many others. Kevin, we have to take a very short break. We're going to come right back, and we're going to talk about some really important steps that you have taken that will enable investors who don't want their money going to our mortal enemies to actually invest patriotically instead. What a concept. That and more with the great Kevin Freeman right after this. Welcome back. Kevin Freeman is in the house virtually, our duty expert on economic warfare, the host of a marvelous program, Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman. You can learn more about it at economicwarroom.com. Not least, take advantage of these marvelous blueprints, battle plans, he calls them, from each show, which talk to you about what you can do about the things that he's warning of in those programs. It's a marvelous resource for all of us. Kevin, just before we pivot to one of the specific things that you're doing in this regard, I did want to just mention our colleague Michael Waller at the Center for Security Policy has recently written a piece at Real Clear Policy talking about the extent to which the dangers that we've just described are being compounded by that compromised commander-in-chief shutting down something called the China Initiative. Talk about what the China Initiative was and why arguably it's more needed now than ever.
Well, the China Initiative was a look at how China has infiltrated our society. You mentioned it. It's unrestricted warfare. And the government needed to recognize it. By shutting it down, the government is essentially saying, we don't want to see it. Don't show us. Don't tell us. That would only be done by someone who was co-opted. Remember, President Biden himself, when he was running, when he was campaigning, he said, come on, man, they're not a threat to us. And he completely dismissed any credible look at China. And once he got in office, he did exactly that. It wants to shut down the China Initiative, doesn't want the research, the information coming out where we're looking at all of the infiltration that they're doing in the universities and the government and so forth.
You know, I've described many times what is going on under this administration across the board, domestically and internationally, as a wrecking operation, Kevin. And it has sort of two things that are common denominators. One is all of these policies are bad for America. I think it's fair to say that all of them are beneficial to China. And shutting down the China Initiative, which was bringing prosecutions against people who were penetrating and subverting us from within, some of them Chinese nationals, which gave rise to concerns about xenophobia, but in practice means an effort to actually stop the Chinese, their nationals, their agents of influence, their fellow travelers, their old friends, those that they have compromised from actually taking us down to their benefit. Speaking of doing something about all of this, Kevin, you have a marvelous private sector initiative that can help American investors who don't want their money, whether they're government employees or whether they're in the larger investing population, to be benefiting our mortal enemies. Tell us a bit about it.
Yeah, well, it's built on this concept that we mentioned in the last segment. People are saying, that, like the movie Network from the 1970s, they're pulling open the window and shouting, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. So we're giving them something to do about it. If you're mad as hell that your money has been taken from your pension plan and savings and investments or even your index fund and has been favoring and benefiting China, and we're telling you it has, then you can pull that money out and you can put it in patriotic investments. And the first thing people say is, okay, how do I do that? And it sounds complicated. It's not that complicated. What you need to do is find a financial advisor who's been trained by the National Security Investment Consultant Institute, a group that I started and you helped me with 10 years ago. And we are training financial advisors at Liberty University. You can go to nsic.org if you're a financial advisor, and you can sign up to take an 8-week course to learn all about protecting your clients. And if you're a client, you want one of those advisors. And if you've already got a financial advisor, send them to us. We will train them. They can go to economicwarroom.com/advisor, and you can register your CPA, your insurance agent, your stockbroker, your financial planner, anybody who helps you with your money. You can ask them to help you get out of China and start to invest, not only to benefit America, but to benefit your own family. This is absolutely the most essential initiative I've ever been a part of. We've got to help people get their money out of China that are building weapons aimed against us and put that money into patriotic investments that will grow, prosper, and benefit all of America.
Yeah, I am so excited about this idea, Kevin, and the fact that you've not only been incubating it for years now, I've been privileged to be part of it along the trail, but that you've had, and I mentioned this earlier, a very important development just in the past week or so. Tell us about your partnership with, I think it's the most important online educational program in the country, Liberty University.
Well, we went to Liberty University because during COVID, you know, we couldn't have lots of large training classes, you know, where you meet at a hotel or whatever. And Liberty University has historically been the leader in online education. I mean, they were one of the real pioneers. They're one of the very best. So we went to Dave Bratt, who's a friend, former congressman, the dean, a, you know, PhD in economics, brilliant guy, and said, please help us offer a course that you can get a certificate from. And Liberty does this for a lot of different courses, but they, on May 30th, our course launches. This year, May 30th, the first online NSIC education course. And we're thrilled with that because those advisors, as they come out, will find there is a large number of Americans who have money, some cases, very significant money, and they're mad as hell. They want to invest it patriotically. And so advisors need to go there now. The early ones are going to have options of a lot of clients. And the clients want lots of advisors to choose from. This is a unique opportunity. It is like an opening class. And we want the good patriotic and financial advisors to join, sign up at nsic.org. And we want clients who want a good advisor to sign up at economicwarroom.com/advisor and say, hey, get me an advisor, or here's my advisor, train him or train her.
Great. Kevin, again, I'm just tremendously impressed by what you've done. The partnership with Dave Bratt is going to be huge. You are making it possible for people to do something about one of the greatest financial scandals, certainly if not greatest scandals, period, in our history, underwriting our mortal enemy. Don't allow them to do that with your money, folks. Kevin, we have to leave it at that. Thanks. Come back to us again soon if you would. I hope the rest of you will do the same again tomorrow. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us for this edition of Securing America. And I really pray that you feel better equipped to help us in doing just that. It's vital. For more information about what you can do, check out our website, securingamerica.tv. And then, as I'm very fond of saying, go forth and multiply.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.